and we need to use the drone for safety or emergency reasons. And there are drones actually that can fly during tornadoes. Researchers at Caltech, California Institute of Technology, have developed a drone that can fight back against powerful winds, which would render the most current models usable using intelligent learning. So in other words, the article that I sent you the link to shows the picture of that drone, and there is also a drone on YouTube that could be seen. And this one has a quite unique shape. If you look at the picture, can you describe it? You have better English and Turkish.
I don't have the page up, Wesley. I just have your email up.
Yeah, the last link. If you click on the last link, it opens up with the picture and the article. Link number five. Number five.
Okay. It looks like a four rotor drone. It has a guard around the blades to not damage anything, and it's built a little bit sturdier than most that I've seen.
Yeah, but the guard is half of the circle, so it's not fully enclosed like most of the drones have. And that drone was tested in Caltech Center for Autonomous System and Technologies and put through the real weather wind tunnel. That was 10 foot by 10 foot array and more than 1200 tiny computer controls fans allows the engineers to simulate everything from light gust to the gale. And that was the drone was able to not only withstand it, but by moving around was able to learn how to make its next move and to exit.
Okay, it's an interesting design. I would love to see the wind tunnel reports to see the way that the wind goes around it. You know, theoretically, if you needed to protect the blades, you wouldn't need to protect the inside of the blades because, you know, no one's going to kind of take their arm and put it in the middle of four rotating rotors on a drone. You know, that's probably optimally designed for surface interactions, but it might play a significant part in wind tunnel experiments. It's difficult to judge just by the picture.
Yeah, whatever links you find interesting, you can put it on your website. This way, people would be able to visit the links and compare information. Now, what caught my attention is that they have developed Neuralfly, a deep learning method that can help drones cope with new and unknown wind conditions, allowing them to fly even in extreme events such as hurricanes. And that's something. How can you develop a flying machine that can be actually maneuvered by a human being in hurricanes and to exist?
Well, I thought the idea was it's an artificial intelligence software, so it's not being tweaked by a human being. It's being internally tweaked by a neural network. I assume that they have put up a lot of model simulations and spit out all of the pertinent information into an AI learning program and crunched the nodes and developed some kind of a neural network for solving those situations, which begs the question of how well it correlates with real-life situations, which very often these reports predate significant practical use. You know, it didn't crash the first time, so Caltech sent a public release a message out to the presses, and everyone is celebrating each other. So a lot of times these autonomous systems are well conceived and look good on paper, but very much like the Tesla auto-driving software, tends to not work. So again, a lot of these things are of interest to me and hopefully to people out there listening, but that doesn't necessarily mean they've been proven. It means they have a chance of being proven at this point.
And to Xian. So the 5-pound drone can recalculate weather condition around in 5 times per second. So it's taking 5 hertz. 5 hertz per second. 5 impulses per second. And adapt its path accordingly. So we say the speed is approximately 20 miles per hour up to 60 miles per hour. And then we have a 5 impulses. Now, during a demonstration, the drone managed to stay upright with little effort and perform series of figure of 8 movements between tight obstacles while being blasted with winds up to 12.1 meters per second without varying, of course. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And to Xia.
Okay, I mean, these are all good things. Again, the problem is, if we were, you know, there's thousands of articles like this generated every month, and very seldom can you go back to the old articles and Google the future results. They're just not available. So a lot of very promising things never succeed in their promises, and you got to keep that in mind. So. Well, again, I hate to be a kind of a party pooper, but just because it gets a good write-up from Caltech's public relations department doesn't necessarily mean it is an ultimate success. It is a promising technology that hopefully will mature and go on to be of great use, but the odds are against most of these things doing that. Usually, they run out of steam, they meet some kind of problem that can't be solved, and it goes back into the file. So, we'll see.
Okay. One more thing. The Caltech professor, the chief of the research team, Song Jo Chung, and there is a number of other guys, leading scientists, Guana Shi, and a few other names. It's not that it's something special, but I remember when I was at Hunter College, I had the reason to meet with one of the professors. I saw that 80% of students are Chinese. Or at least Asian. And it's interesting that somebody has to pay for them being here, education, which is more expensive than to American students. And the number of engineers in China exceeds the number of total population of United States. So just the number of engineers in China exceeds number of population, entire population of United States. Just a point. Back to you.
Okay, unfortunately, when you first paused, I thought you paused, and so I went on for a while, and what I probably did was just double with you.
I'm sorry about that, yes. So I said that at Hunter, more than 80%, Hunter College, more than 80% are Asian, and a number of engineers in China exceeds the total population of United States. Back to you.
Okay, and we've kind of talked about this for years and years and years. It's a cultural thing, I think. Asian families have a much stronger investment in their children doing well and being educated. And so they're driven a bit more than American children are. In Japan, there's always reports of Japanese students doing poorly on their exams and trying to commit suicide, which is terrible stress to put on a child. There's some similar things that go on in China. It's a different world. America, unfortunately, doesn't seem to value education as much as I think it should. And, the ability to really think through problems, I think, is incredibly useful. But the more I talk to some people, the more I get the feeling that they didn't learn that in school. So it's a different world. Also, American students are more interested in looking at the return on investment. College is very expensive, so they're looking for bankers and investments and all kinds of things that they think they'll make millions of dollars. Researching is a very, very is a great career, but it's not a terribly high-paying career. So if you're just in it for the cash, you don't go into the sciences, you don't go into research, you go into some kind of business type of or banking situation. And that's the tough situation we're in. A lot of American students are not that interested in college education. They're not interested in goal-oriented, highly technical fields, and Asian people generally are, based on cultural aspects.
Your echo link's gone.
Well, apparently, yeah, okay, the echo link's back on.
Okay, and the last topic for today is injectable robots. I couldn't find the exact article. I sent you an article 1 year old, but it was May 22. That was University of Texas, Austin. Injectable nanorobots, army of injectable nanorobots, jointly self-learning. So not only they are injectable, and they are self-learning and could act jointly, could learn jointly. Let me jump. So the article that I just sent you, that was the last email that I sent you. I'm giving you from London instead of Texas, Austin. But somebody can find it. So scientists created an army of microscopic four-leg robots, too small to see with naked eye, that walk when stimulated by laser and could be injected into the body through hypodermic needles. And microscopic robots you can have an array of them and use them in medicine and trying to find the most essential part of it. They have combining control circuitry, and their moving parts could be independently maneuvered. So they are 0.1 millimeter wide, but those from Texas Austin are nanometer big ones. So we're talking about human technology that was created 1 year ago in London instead of United States. So by shooting laser light into those solar cells, researchers were able to trigger the legs to move, causing the robot to walk around. Back to you, and to Adrian.
AC2GS. Well, I guess all these researchers saw a fantastic voyage where a team of people got into a ship and were miniaturized and injected into a sick person to save their lives. You know, nanotechnology, again, is fascinating. I still remember the guy who was famous for popularizing it way back in the 70s. Did a presentation at NYU that I attended. It was a fascinating discussion then. I've grown over time to think that actually biological devices are as much nanotechnology as any kind of mechanical object. And there's only so much small you could shrink actual truly mechanical gears and springs and motors and such. Whereas you could create molecular structures the way our cells do all the time, that does almost everything. So I think the ultimate future for nanotechnology is going to be of a more organic nature, personally. But again, fascinating research doesn't really do anything terribly useful except is a proof of a concept. I don't know if I would like little mechanical things walking around in my veins because if they get stuck, you know, you're basically going to get a clot in there. So it has a lot of risks, it has no benefits, and it's an interesting proof of concept at this point.
Is the recording working?
Yeah, right now it is, but it's, you know, always subject to just drop out. Most of the people on Echo Link have moved over, I think, to my stream just to hear it because my stream doesn't get interrupted.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I'd be interested to find out if Wesley ever saw Fantastic Voyage. You know, it's quite a movie. I always thought that was excellent. But back to you, Roy. Yes, I did. It is a very old movie, but it was absolutely amazingly funny. I concur.
And they have repeated it and redone it and kind of made a goofy version of it. The most recent version of Fantastic Voyage that I've seen was a Rick and Morty cartoon with the same premise that they shrunk people and injected them into a human being to fix some problem that they were suffering from. So it's a very goofy science fiction. I don't know if anyone ever took any of it particularly seriously, especially when the machine that shrinks things started to wear off and the ship started to increase in size. Then there's, of course, real bad physics violations where conservation of mass is totally violated. But it was a fun movie for the 60s.
Interesting is how old we are. By recalling something that everybody from us was able to see when we were young, just realize that the time is going on. Entering here.
Well, I've been noticing it for way too long. You know, the demographics of this hobby, I love it to pieces, and I wish and I try as best as I can. I'm a little bit more active in Brooklyn Amateur Radio Group, and we try really hard to get young amateur radio operators. As wonderful as we all are, you know, sometimes it's interesting to get the opinion of someone with a different viewpoint who's only 20, 30, even 40 years old. Most of us are in our 60s to 70s, and we're a little bit homogeneous.
In nature, journal Nature, Alan Brooks and Michael Sterno of Massachusetts Institute of Technology said that the concept of robotics small enough to travel through the blood vessels had been run since Nobel laureate Richard Feynman. Was it? I didn't know about it. So That was what, 1959? Back to you.
I don't know. I don't really recall him being a big promoter of the concept. Richard Feynman made a lot of lectures and chatted about a lot of different things and was ahead of his time in many ways. I do not recall any particular, and I've read a couple of his books, any topic covering nanotechnology per se. It really, as far as I was aware, kind of came into its own in the 70s.
Okay, I've got an email that soon we're going to have Humfest. I hope, Dr. Roy, you can make it and take Xi'an.
No, afraid not. I'm going to have to pass it this time.
Okay, the last time I wasn't there neither. Anyhow, it's always my pleasure if you change your mind. Thank you very much for your attention and attention of the audience and to Xi'an.
And I appreciate your help, Wesley. And I thank you for this little presentation. Again, this is AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. Just curious if there's anyone out there who has any comments or any questions. The topic is, subject is open to any science discussion. So if there's someone out there with either a comment or a topic or a question, please give me your first name and your call sign.
WB2BXO, Frank.
Yes, Frank, I'm glad to hear you. I'm glad to see you on Echolink. I wish we could solve that audio dropout problem.
Yeah, if I get annoyed enough, I'll put up the other stream at the same time. Anyway, I do actually have a question. One of the guys on our local club net here in Northeast Philadelphia, and I think it is a fairly good station, mentioned that on 17 meters, 17 meter band, which for those who are not familiar is around 18 megahertz, is mentioned that he's hearing, I think what is sometimes called LDEs, long delayed echoes. He isn't watching them on a scope, so he can't give me a number of milliseconds, but it sounds like between a quarter of a second or so when the box drops on sideband. I know that's not imaginary. If I remember correctly, it's not imaginary. It's a known phenomena. And if I remember correctly, it skipped going all the way around the Earth. So he had thought it might be EME. I think the delay would have to be quite a bit longer than what he's noticing it for it to be EME. And I don't know if the echoes would be strong enough in any case to hear on the typical gain of a horizontal HF antenna. Wonder what you think, Roy. Okay.
Ed, recognized. It wouldn't be that much of a delay, but I don't think you would be able to hear it unless you had a really incredible setup with a lot of gain, or you were operating on one of these low signal digital methods. I think it's incredibly more likely that it's around the world than it's EME.
Yeah, that's my thought also. I didn't really hear what Ed said, but you're net control, so I'll let you pass it over to him. Yeah, that's what I had thought, is that it's around the world skip. I was rather surprised by the time of day being mid-morning. My impression, it's more of a gray line phenomena. But as we head up toward the sunspot peak, I guess almost anything is possible, though I don't think propagation is quite that good yet. So go ahead.
Around the world, about 8
Okay, so what was the delay that your friend recognized? How many seconds?
didn't specify. If it was on sideband, I would assume, I would think it would have to be close to a second for him to hear it on his own signal, because the box just doesn't drop that quickly, which sounds kind of long to me. Somebody's probably calculated it. I think round the world propagation would be on the order of a quarter of a second. But maybe it could go around several times. Go ahead.
Ed, you wanted to say something?
Well, at 186,000 miles per second, around the world, about 8. And out to the moon and back is about 500,000 miles, so it's about 3 seconds, that's all.
Okay, very good. I don't know. I mean, I have never heard anyone think that any of these echoes were EME-based. I could have missed that. Almost every time I've heard rationalizations, it was around the world, just because the loss of bouncing off the moon and coming back is significant enough to warrant the types of Yagi arrays that K2RIW had on its QSL card. And nowadays, people are able to kind of cheat to the laws of physics with the Joe, I'm blocking on the poor guy's name, his low noise algorithm binary methods of moon bouncing.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul. Joe Taylor, by the way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was about to tell you that, but I didn't really hear Ed. I don't know. A little on the low side. I turned up the volume fast enough. But anyway, around the Earth, it's going to be, it would take, in 1 second, you'd go around the Earth 7 times. So he would hear the signal, like, immediately, like 1/7 of a second later. If it was, you know, the long path. And the moon, you're looking at it, what, roughly a second and a half to the moon, so double that. Back to you, Ross.
Okay, very good. So, you know, I mean, we'll never know for sure, but that's my best guess, that it's going around the world, which is a nice thing.
Thank you, sir.
David, you wanted to say something?
No. I have another question. Question is, what do you know about global digital currency?
Okay. I don't think I got the... It sounded like you said global digital currency. So I probably missed the last word.
Global digital currency.
Okay, unfortunately, there seems to be noise artifact, and it sounds like maybe you're in a restaurant or something. So I can't quite make out with that last word. I mean, if there's anyone else out there who has a better ear than I do and can tell me what that third word is, global digital, and I don't for the life of me know what the last word is.
Currency, i.e. Bitcoin.
Oh!
I thought he said concrete.
Okay, currency. Now, it didn't say, like I said, to me it sounded, it kind of was a Rorschach test for us all. It sounded like currency to me. But, okay, global digital currency. So you're talking about cryptocurrency, right?
I don't think anybody knows what cryptocurrency is.
Well, it only shows that they should have listened to TechnicalNet about 3 or 4 months ago. I think it was Rich, W2BZ, brought up the subject. And we had a nice long discussion. Lou, NY2H, joined in. And we talked about how cryptocurrency wasn't anonymous, but pseudonymous, meaning that It's tagged with a unique identifier that isn't quite your name, but you can trace them. So we kind of went into that subject, but we can go into it again. David, was that what you were asking about, though?
Negative. Global digital currency, like global trading like 20,000 IPO per day, and currency from some kind of device that basically holds your bank.
Is that something different than crypto?
I think what he's alluding
yes,
to, and
the
I'm not quite sure, but there are central bank record systems, and they trade digital tokens
everything.
Back and forth as their official currency, and it's kind of the other end of cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency is a non-centrally located situation. It's dispersed. These are centrally run by different banks of different countries. So they're a lot cheaper to maintain and a lot less expensive cryptocurrency because it's spread out and requires a proof of work. Requires a great deal of electricity to be run, whereas the centrally run servers don't require any of that. So it's simply central banks' method of promoting their own digital currency that's not as costly and anonymous and lacks all the regulatory agencies. But it's just another form of currency. It's just the banks are digitalizing them. They have the same regulatory limitations that cryptocurrency people hate.
No, you don't get what I'm saying. Look up Global Token Exchange. 20,000 new IPO every day. Global and all the major banks and financial institutions are switching over to it as we speak.
Okay, not really familiar with this one. I would imagine that if everyone was switching over to it, it would make it into the news at one point or another. I tried looking up Global Token Exchange, and all I'm getting at this point is a cryptocurrency, I think, called Global Token. So there's got to be another way of keying it in, because right now GTE seems to be just another crypto coin.
KD2WOT.
Yes, Chris.
Perhaps he's referring to the NFT, the non-fungible token.
Well, that's probably even worse because that's backed by crypto blockchains, and isn't even a kind of monetary unit. We went over that as well. It's basically placing your statement of ownership of something that's not physical onto a blockchain, and usually offering a web link where anyone could see the image, if that's what it is that your NFT is for, and download it for free. So the actual image isn't owned by the NFT, just bragging rights because it's an entry. It's like a secure, unerasable Excel sheet.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem, Chris. But getting back to you, David, I don't know. You asked me to look up Global Token Exchange. And the very first thing I get is from Coinbase, which is a cryptocurrency. And it says Global Token, its current value is 0.000674 cents per coin. and they seem to indicate that it is a cryptocurrency. So maybe there's another term for what exactly you're asking about?
No, it's GTE. By the way, NFT is a microscopic part of GTE, and also all the trading that goes on, NASDAQ and the stock exchange, will become part of the global token exchange, the token-based trading, and there should also be some way to exchange payment using some kind of card with magnetic strip or something that can hold, maybe, I think it's a chip, and I put it, you basically have an ID chip, and on the ID chip is your money.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I've Googled it, and all I get is cryptocurrency, and now you're talking about non-fungible tokens, which is purely a blockchain-oriented. The blockchain is really only for cryptocurrency and non-fungible tokens, which is kind of part of the same thing. They've been losing billions of dollars. They've had people steal billions of dollars. It's very erratic. It's financially incredibly dangerous. I mean, people can make fast money, and they could also lose fast money. Every day there's an article about someone basically hacking a exchange site and stealing, $100 million. And so perhaps under some other name, there's something that you're trying to tell us about. But as far as if you look up GLT, you get a crypto coin, and non-fungible tokens are pure cryptocurrency based. You buy them with cryptocurrency. They land on the same blockchain as the cryptocurrency's blockchain is. So it's all crypto. It has nothing to do with legitimate financial securities. There's too much regulations in real securities that they would never let that happen at this point.
Crypto shit.
Say again?
Enter again. I have a question. Part of the sanctions on Russia was to strip them from ability to trade monetary values other than the ruble. And with companies leaving the market of Russia, there were also crypto companies that they were actually blocking Russia from trading money through their network. I wonder, how does it work? Because that's the real information. So Russia was actually stopped with being able to use cryptocurrency. Interesting.
Well, I mean, the system, I forget that there's a name for the system. It's basically European and American banks. And we got those spigots closed off. So they kind of went over to China, and they're using China's method of exchanging rubles with other currencies. So it was just a little bit of a blip. Theoretically, there's all kinds of ways through exchanges. Exchanges are the usual way that people buy and sell cryptocurrency. Going around exchanges is a lot of problems, very difficult. As it is, cryptocurrency is a couple of layers of pain in the backside. If you pay for something on your credit card, it goes through almost immediately because MasterCard, I think, is built of the server network and such. Can throw out a lot of transactions per second, but because of the Bitcoin and Ethereum use a blockchain, there's very few transfers per second. So if enough people are trying to trade, buy and sell, you can clog up their blockchains for hours, and sometimes it never goes through. So people use exchanges. With exchanges, they can do things like IP address blocks and other means of blocking users. But I'm sure with enough technology, they can, the Russians could go around that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, I think what you were thinking of, the network you were thinking of, is SWIFT, the Society for Wired International Funds Transfers or something like that. I don't think I have it exactly right.
Which includes all the existing markets, and you can have as many as 20,000 IPOs each day.
Okay, what does IPO stand for in this situation?
You know, it's when a company first goes public on the market.
Okay, but that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I don't know of any exchange money that equates to the number of purchases of different companies going public. That doesn't quite make sense as a sentence there.
The most common stock exchanges, either Amex or Fortune 500, whatever, you know, that the maximum number of IPOs is like 700 per day, and that was a record for them. But the idea is, you know, that this is such a huge network that the possibilities are tremendous.
Okay, but again, I'm totally unaware of it. I've never heard of it. When I try and Google it, I get something that is probably something different. So the best I could suggest is if you find some web pages that discuss the concept, email them to me, and I'll take a look at it and tell you what I think. Right now, again, it's not like I'm an investment counselor, God forbid. So I don't keep my finger in this subject often, but there's a lot of mixed terms that don't quite go together. NFTs shouldn't be anywhere near any actual financial investment because they're unregulated and can be extremely financially dangerous, and cryptocurrency with that as well. So. You know, I mean, this might be some kind of guy's weird dream. It happens to the best of people. Facebook was going to put out was going to have Facebook currency. You know, in the same way that you have euros and dollars, there were going to be Facebook, and you would buy and sell Facebook currency. And you know, he was going to set himself up as one of the major central banks of the world, God forbid. So, you know, people have schemed all kinds of interesting schemes, but usually they blow up because everyone else doesn't want them to have any of that power. Right now, it's central banks of major financial countries, and it's probably going to continue that way in the future.
Well, the idea, one thing that I heard was there was some kind of fear of our banks getting hacked by foreign countries. I know it sounds crazy. Then they talked about how to deal with the situation, which made a lot more sense.
Okay, the problem, though, is that banks are relatively incredibly secure. The central banking centers have not been breached as far as I'm aware. Non-centralized, decentralized situations like crypto coins, again, every day I wake up there's another article about another 10, 20, 100 million, a billion, 2 billion being lost. So they're incredibly insecure. So, you know, is anything 100% secure? Probably not. Are decentralized systems more secure than centralized? Absolutely no. So I don't know if this plan that you're reading about is a decentralized or a centralized, but it smacks, you know, when people start to talk about NFTs, it smacks of a decentralized one. So those are incredibly financially dubious. Usually there's a lot of hot air, there's a lot of promises, and there's very little ultimately that comes to pass, except for bankruptcies.
Well, keeping the banking system organized is very good, and it's very important. It's certainly better than fighting.
Okay, but it's not like anyone gives anyone else a chance, a choice. Aggressors will be aggressive, and you can't just kind of say naughty, naughty, and send them to their room. So I would like that to happen. It would make life much safer. But that's not the way humanity works these days.
QSL, KG2RY. Yeah, I think it would be better if both sides could somehow research and work on solving the problem.
Well, there's a lot of work as far as finances involved. There's a lot of people making a lot of claims. As I mentioned before, Facebook, I think, wasted $1 billion. On their scheme to build up their own cryptocurrency. At one point it was going to be a stable coin. Stable coins were an interesting idea. They were going to somehow link them to dollars and euros and yuans and other currencies, and it would be, you know, worth a particular price, and you would get somewhere out of nowhere a significant interest rate. There was recently a stable, I think it was called Terra or Luna. They were part of the same organization. One of them was allowed to kind of sink or swim, and the other one was a stable coin, and it basically got busted. So, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars got lost. So there's a lot of people working on concepts, on schemes, on plans. Most of them have not worked out well. They've led to trillions of dollars of speculation. You know, I wouldn't wish cryptocurrency on my worst enemy. There are people out there who make money. You know, it's the concept of the last fool. If you're not the last fool, then you end up making money. And the poor guy who's the last fool is the poor guy who loses all of his money. But always interested in new ideas on currency, but cryptocurrency seems to be an excuse to steal other people's money at this point.
USL, yeah, I was a little bit suspicious about the cryptocurrency. I was also looking at E-Trade. You know, I think the reason for GTE, the reason why it's being built, not only is it a far better system than anything that exists, but also it will help to reduce the conflict in the world. People are competing and fighting, and, you know, maybe they should just get involved in making money.
Well, unfortunately, part of wars is making money. There's a lot of companies that make a great deal of profit during these times of blowing stuff up, because there's companies that make things to blow stuff up. There's companies that put things back together after the other company stuff blew them up. And some people, war profiteers, have made fortunes in war. They're not separate entities, unfortunately, and there is, to a degree, a financial pushing factor in warfare, that some people and some companies make a heck of a lot of money when the world is busy killing each other.
Well, I guess all I can say is that GTE, when it appears, was built with good intention.
Okay. I again, don't quite know what to tell you. I'll look into it more. If you could send me a web page. Right now, it doesn't really strike me as legit. It's one of these many, many questionable schemes that guys who don't have any money and basically live in a van are promoting, and they think that they're going to get incredibly rich. But we'll look into it further. We'll see.
Well, you know, I get a lot of emails from trade companies and financial institutions, you know. A number of people are talking about GTE, then there were other people talking about this thing called reset, and another one called distortion. And supposedly these people are experts in their field, you know. So, yeah, you're right, you know, maybe this GTE thing is just, somebody's made-up concept, you know. But it's kind of funny how they have so many details, you know, about them. And I guess the question is, why doesn't everybody know about it?
Yeah, that's an important factor. Things with that much, quote, promise or that much reality should be all over the place, and they're not. I finally found a weird page of a guy I'd never heard of, a LinkedIn page, and basically it sounds like it's a premise for just another cryptocurrency exchange site. And as I mentioned before, exchange sites are the easiest way of putting dollars in and getting bitcoins, or take your bitcoins and trade them in for Ethereum, or trade your Ethereum for Terra, and on it goes. So I don't think it's a very promising thing. It's just another scheme that a bunch of cryptocurrency people have for another exchange that's most likely going to have so many holes in it that if it ever takes off in a year or two, they'll have their own little web blog entry where someone took off with $1 billion of global token exchange money. So I think it's all PR for the most part, and that would explain why it's very difficult to scratch out any details on it. It seems to be more of a pipe dream of a bunch of guys that I've never heard of.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's better to have such a prototype that could actually happen and not to provoke anybody to fight, you know.
Well, it's good sentiments, but in practice, I don't see it happening. You know, making financial transfers easier, faster, or more secure, which this exchange will do none of those, to me is not going to bring peace to the world, because again, the financial aspects of war are what gets us into wars more often than not. And, you know, cryptocurrency, we went over it a couple of months ago, as I mentioned, it's incredibly insecure. It's not private. If they figure out your pseudonym, they can look up every transaction that you ever made. It's unreversible. If you transfer money to the wrong address, there is no way to get the money back. There is no way to regulate it yet because there's no regulatory laws. So it's used for money laundering and all kinds of schemes. So it's kind of a mess. And since there's no regulation and there's no requirements, anyone with a passing interest in writing software can copy someone else's exchange with the bugs in it, and these things are waiting to be broken into. So although it's altruistic, and I wish an exchange could fix everything and make wars go away, I don't see how it possibly could.
Yeah, but if you create a global currency, you create a global currency, some people are not going to like it very much. You know, the only way that this could happen is if we're forced to do it. So hopefully that will never happen.
Okay, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, there's on YouTube you find a bunch of people who are globalists and who are against globalists, and talk about the Illuminati and one world government. I've been hearing about that since I was 10 years old. I don't think this even is about a global currency. Again, it seems to be a global token exchange, and the idea is to broaden the appeal rather than settling on the big money makers of Bitcoin and Ethereum, to be more open to a number of different cryptocurrencies, each one with its own nuanced risks and problems. So again, it sounds like a bunch of guys sitting around in a chat room or Discord who figured they might as well try it, and so they put in a couple of LinkedIn articles and hope that someone's going to come with a big bag of $1 billion to finance them. Lots of luck. Anyway, thanks David for bringing it up. Always like to talk about cryptocurrency. Let me get to radiometers, because if I don't get it to it this week, probably I'm going to retire it. Okay?
QSL, I just want to say that the global token exchange is open for all trading. You know, standard trading is included in this thing. I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Okay, very good. On to radiometers. If anyone goes to my link page for the last, God knows, 6 weeks, I've put it up, two images, a nice animated GIF or GIF of a Crookes radiometer, and right below it a diagram for something called a Nichols radiometer. A Crookes radiometer is a nice little toy. Many people own one. I have one sitting in my living room as I speak. The Crookes radiometer was designed in the early 1800s, and I was wondering, anyone out there has an idea of what Professor Crookes believed was the mechanism for his Crookes radiometer? Anyone want to volunteer anything?
W2HO.
Yes, Howard.
I don't have anything to say about the radiometer, but I'm very interested in listening to your speak on it. I just wanted to thank you. I appreciated your explanation and your editorial on cryptocurrency. It was very interesting, and I appreciated it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Howard. I'm interested in it. I'm frightened of it. I'm frightened of the people who kind of ruin their lives. There have been more than a few entries on Reddit of people who put their life savings into Terra, and it disappeared overnight, and they're very distraught and somewhat suicidal, and it's terrible to see. So, you know, if I can caution people, the beauty is this is a kind of a Zoomer type of thing. Most of us don't know or want to know anything about cryptocurrency. It's new. It's too new tech. So it's not that dangerous to us. But younger people can kind of ruin their future by getting into debt over this nonsense.
Yes, Roger on that. Very informative. Thank you. W2HL.
Okie doke. Anyway, getting back to the previous, anyone have an idea of how Crookes explained how his new radiometer worked when he first invented it and presented it to the world?
W2EAB will have a question about it.
Certainly, Ed.
I believe a Crookes radiometer is a glass bulb with a little doohickey that spins around when exposed to sunlight. Let's verify that is what you were talking about.
Yes, it is. As I mentioned to people who have access to the Internet, if they go to my link page or roy.ac2gs.com, there's a lovely little animated GIF of it in action, rotating. But yes, it is a glass bulb with an internal spike and a series of four diamond-shaped plates. One side is silver, the other side is carbon black.
Have to be four, and do they have to be diamond-shaped?